Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the flannel panel, Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer, and myself. And I got to straighten out some history, and then we'll get to talking about Pope Francis and his comments to the Russian youth, and then his comments to his fellow Jesuits about American ideological conservatives. And I'm sure there's a lot to say there. But okay, it was Kublai Khan is what I was, not Attila the Hun.
Which rhymes with Hannibal.
Mother. I don't know why it came out as Hannibal and then switched to Attila. I was trying to say Kublai Khan. His mother was a Nestorian Christian. And Joe looked it up and confirmed that. Thank you, Joe.
Yes, she was the daughter-in-law of Genghis Khan and the mother of Kublai Khan.
Yeah. So among those Mongols, who are the great Mongolian Empire, there were Christians. They weren't all Christians, but there were Nestorian Christians among them.
They had some difficulties with some of the Christological teachings.
Well, that was part of the – yeah, because the missionaries that came to them brought what we would call a Nestorian
view.
You know, you were talking about the rise of Islam, and this is actually a really important dimension to the rise of Islam. The Nestorian story plays out in several important ways.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So Muhammad's brother-in-law, I want to say, is a Nestorian priest. And so you have a lot of the understandings Muhammad has of Christianity are mediated through Nestorianism. But also, a lot of the reasons why North Africa ends up becoming Muslim is because there's so much infighting among Christians that the Catholic / Orthodox Roman Empire and Byzantine Empire is pretty harsh with the Nestorians in North Africa and in the Middle East. And so the Muslims come along and basically say, hey, just pay the demitude tax and you'll be fine. And it doesn't work out like that in practice at all. Right. It just becomes this really insufferable, intolerable atmosphere that really effectively strangles and destroying Christianity.
Right. That is an important point, that Christianity was not healthy when Islam came across North Africa. But maybe we could take that as a lesson to not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by all means, like when we are divided, that opens the door for.
We ruin the gospel.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, something, it says as much in John 17.
Something else that I find fascinating about the persistence of heresies is we have a kind of a two-dimensional, I think, understanding of some of the really early councils. Like that Arian question was settled, or that Theotokos question was settled. So the Christological heresies that are settled at Chalcedon don't go away. They continue. Right. They continue.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. I mean,
But they continue to persist in Europe and and in the East long after, Leo's tome.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in a way that you could say, well, the Pope settled the controversy over artificial contraception, but that doesn't mean it's settled.
Oh, no.
It'll go centuries before it's settled in a subtle
way. The kind of paraphrase of what St. Augustine said. You know, it's kind of a misquotation, but it's getting to the gist of what he's saying, that Rome has spoken and the matter is settled. But so often, it takes a long time before that settledness actually kind of kicks
settles
in.
Down.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and sometimes it takes the form of a schism, where one side takes the ball and goes home.
Well, let's talk about Pope Francis and his comments on Russia, because he took a lot of heat and also received a lot of praise for these two things he said.
I liked what he said.
All right, so this is Francis said to a bunch of Russian kids who he was communicating with via Zoom or something. Never forget your inheritance. You are the heirs of the great Russia. The great Russia of the saints, of the kings, of the great Russia of the great Russia of Peter the Great, of Catherine the Second, the great imperial Russia, cultivated with so much culture and humanity. Never forget this inheritance. You are the heirs of the great Mother Russia. Go forward and thank you. Thank you for your way of being, for your way of being Russian. These are, of course, Catholic kids. And then on the way back from Mongolia, well, I'll get to the Mongolia. First of all, this really bothered people because, as you may have heard, despite all the reporting on Burning Man, there is a war going on between Russia and Ukraine. Russia has invaded the Ukraine. So This met with a lot of anger because you cannot currently say anything nice about Russia.
Yeah, you said it really well earlier when we were talking today, Si. Russophobia is at an all-time high right now, and it's just not politically correct to say anything praiseworthy about Russia presently or its past. But I know that he got grief, the Pope did, for mentioning Peter the Great and Catherine II.
Right.
And of course, these people had their flaws and their cruelties, I think, of Peter especially. But here's a man who built a navy for Russia, had a deliberate plan to move the capital from Moscow, which was completely inaccessible, to St. Petersburg on a river that had access to the sea, endowed through his personal fortune hundreds and hundreds of monasteries, was a great friend of the church, albeit the Orthodox Church, but nonetheless, I mean, these are priests with apostolic succession and valid sacraments. And yet he was quite friendly to Catholics too. And Catherine was very, very friendly to Catholics and made a home for the Jesuits when the Pope suppressed them. So
Remember, this Pope is a Jesuit.
Yeah. So actually, that is actually the very first thing I thought when I saw that he had praised Catherine the Great. I thought, oh, you know, he
don't forget. The Jesuits don't forget.
No, she made a home for his converts. But she was like, okay, Holy Father, if you don't want these brilliant men, now, you know, quite apart from whatever the immediate problems surrounding the suppression of the Jesuits were, these were absolutely brilliant and courageous men. I think of the North American martyrs.
Right.
Not just physically courageous with very, very stout hearts, but you think of like the work that Jean Brebeuf did and he was able to do it because he himself was a linguist. He had Greek and he had Latin. He was classically trained, so he's able to make a language for the Hurons a written language that doesn't exist. In any case, so these are brilliant, brilliant men. So Catherine the Great says, "Okay, y'all come here,
and run
my schools."
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And I didn't look this up, but
John Paul Jones? Yeah, I did look it up.
Father of the American Navy went to work for Catherine the Great.
Right. Yeah.
Is there some suggestion maybe they were in love?
No, I don't think that.
Okay. That would have added.
We don't need to find the prurient.
The drama. But then the Pope walked this back. He was asked. On a subsequent presser on the airplane, and he said, and I think quite rightly, he said, "Look, I'm talking about the Russia of Dostoevsky." And the great Christian novelist,
right.
And
can you imagine how Dostoevsky would have felt about knowing the Pope praised him?
Oh yeah, okay.
He was not exactly a fan of the Catholic Church.
But I mean that's all. That is even in the greatness of the Christian culture of Russia. If you take the great heights of Christian culture, there's always an anti-Roman aspect to Russian culture.
Sure.
There always has been.
Very well.
Yeah.
But he walked it back and he said, I learned about Catherine the Great in school and I learned about Peter the Great in school and it's what came to my mind. And if I were the Pope, I wouldn't apologize. I said, these people have a wonderful patrimony.
Well, I think this is
I'm not
what
sure
I
he was really apologizing, was he?
Yeah, he kind of did.
No, he said something like maybe that was.
He said he was not thinking of imperialism when he made those remarks. He said Russian culture is of such beauty, such profoundness, it should not be canceled because of political problems. There were dark political years in Russia, but the heritage is there, available to all. So it's not exactly an apology, although he walked back the imperial stuff.
Well, by the way, I mean, I think we can distinguish between imperial, describing the world of the emperor, and imperialism. Like, we could say there's a kind of American imperialism. There certainly is.
Right.
It's commercial, it's military. But empires are not necessarily bad things.
No, so they certainly are not.
A lot of good has been done by empires.
Some of the greatest good in the history of the world was done certainly by the
Spanish
Holy Roman Empire.
Or Spanish Empire.
Right?
Not the British Empire. They didn't do anything good.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
they did.
But Roman,
they
Spanish.
They gave a lot of countries independence.
I would just say this about the Pope. I genuinely appreciated the fact that he's talking to young people. These are youth in Russia. These are Catholic youth in Russia. And this is a time of anti-Russian sentiment all over in the Western world. There is not a great anti-Russian sentiment in China or India or Africa, but in the Western world where we live, there is just a palpable anti-Russian feeling. And he's just saying to them, hey, don't get down. He's saying you should be, there's beauty in Russia. Russia's a great nation with a great history, and you should relate to that. And thank you for being the way you're Russian. I support him in all that.
This harmonizes with remarks that he made about 3 or 4 years ago, and I've forgotten now on the occasion. It was a major anniversary, a 5,000 or 1,000th anniversary of a saint or something. I've forgotten. But he was telling young people, and he addressed young people especially. Said he was telling them, you are at risk of forgetting your patrimony, and you need to put your phones down and start going to libraries and reading books. And it's exactly what he's telling these kids from Russia: be proud of your patrimony.
And there's a great deal to be proud of in the Russian patrimony.
There's ballet.
I'm avoiding any liturgical cheap shots.
Why? Why are you going to pick
just
on
remembering our patrimony as Catholics?
Oh, well, I mean, there is a split, and there is this East-West split in Christianity, and it certainly has poisoned the relationship between the Russian Orthodox and Catholics for a long, long time. I mean, we can pray that will end, and certainly, I mean, if we're going to be honest about Russian Orthodoxy, it does tend to be a nationalistic religion. They know that that's a problem that they have. The Russian Orthodox leaders have not ever really stood up to national leaders the way that Catholic leaders have in some parts of the world. They tend to go along with whatever the nation is doing. That is a problem that they have. But there's also a problem of the West. Well, there's many problems in the West. So I'm not trying to say just the Russians have problems, but I am saying let's not be Pollyannas about Russian Orthodoxy either.
I don't think that's what the Pope is trying to say,
and I think we can avoid that. You know, the Russian complicity with a lot of, or excuse me, the Russian Orthodox complicity with a lot of Russian imperial aims. That you see this even during the Soviet days. I was in Tallinn, Estonia, and right across from the Estonian parliamentary building, intentionally blocking the view of the Alexander Nevsky Cathedral. And it's a giant Russian Orthodox cathedral built by the Soviets to really thumb their nose at the Estonians for having any kind of civic pride. And so this is, I think, an important dimension that plays out that a lot of Westerners are just oblivious to, that Russian Orthodoxy and vis-a-vis, say, Ukrainian Orthodoxy, there's a whole nationalism thing going on here that isn't reducible to theology. Now, having said that, going back to the Pope's remarks, one of the things it reminded me of, the whole controversy it generated, was Benedict XV during World War I. Because the first homily Pope Francis gives his Pope, he quotes a 19th century French author, early 20th century, Leon Bloy. And he quotes Bloy for the proposition that whoever doesn't worship Christ worships the devil. And I'm fascinated by Bloy as an author and a writer. But the last thing, to my knowledge, that Bloy ever wrote was actually anti-Benedict XV. He wrote a pamphlet called Pilate the XV. And he was excoriating Pope Benedict XV for not being more fervently anti-German during World War I. Yeah. But I think looking back, most of us would say, yeah, I'm glad the Pope didn't get super into the partisan weeds, into the nationalistic weeds, into the, you know, like just as we're critical of the Russian Orthodox for being overly nationalistic, I think many of the people have problems with Pope Francis not being nationalistic enough in kind of the anti-Russian direction.
Right.
I think the Pope has a good sense that like he needs to be above the fray.
And he does need to be above the fray. I wish he'd be above the fray more, frankly. We'll talk about...
Was frankly a pun? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, but look, let me just share what I think about this. A lot of these young people, they come out of college, and they've had a course on the Second World War where they've seen how the Japanese were dehumanized in American media. There was racist depictions of the Japanese. They've seen how the Germans were dehumanized, and they've been told, this is what they did back there in those old days. And now they're doing the same thing. They got out of college, they took those courses, and they're doing the same thing to the Russians. They're treating the Russians as if they're less than human, as if a Russian ballerina shouldn't be allowed to dance in New York City, or a Russian opera soprano shouldn't be allowed to sing in Europe. And why did they not pay attention? We did it to the Japanese and the Germans. That was wrong. When you do it now to the Russians, that is wrong. The fact that the Pope doesn't agree with you, he's right, you're wrong, get over it. Be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I want to warmly invite you, if you're down in New Zealand, I have the great opportunity of coming down and doing some talks. We won't be talking about Russia, but we will be talking about all kinds of interesting things. Trying to share the faith together and having, I hope, a great time. I am just over the moon to get to be going. And we have a guest, Dominic, from the Diocese of Auckland, well, in the Diocese of Auckland, but from New Zealand Evangelion.
He's got the flannel
good
shirt
news
on
for New Zealand. Hi, Dominic. Thanks for joining us.
Kia ora, kia ora.
Now, tell me what that means. I keep hearing that from New Zealanders. What does that mean?
That's hello in Te Reo Māori.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. You wore a flannel.
Way
Thank
to
you
wear
for
the
doing
flannel
that.
Shirt, Dominic.
Did good you know job. That this was flannel day?
Well, I was looking around to see if there was anything else, but I checked and there was nothing else. So, flannel.
I see what he did there.
He checked.
Joe Heschmeyer School.
Oh my gosh, he's got the Joe
humor.
Heschmeyer punning. Thank you for being on with us, but I also want to thank you for this opportunity to come to New Zealand. Tell us what Evangelion does in New Zealand, and then maybe how people can come out to hear the talks.
So the plan for Evangelion, we started a few years ago, and we had the dream and the mission to bring the gospel to everybody in New Zealand. I've been here for about 10 years, originally from England, and I love this country. It's brilliant. I just feel like there needs to be more Catholics. And so I thought we brought out Matt Fred once when I was working as a chaplain, and I thought that was fairly easy. We just need a bit more money. So let's build up a community of people, bring the money together, and start flying people out. And since then, we've done an international virtual conference that we did that in during COVID. We've had Tim Staples come out. We've had Deacon Harold come out. We've got yourself coming out. And there's a few people coming in the future. And the idea is that we want to build like a kind of momentum, because there's people that listen to you guys and all these international speakers, and we can create a community and get everyone going and kind of excited about the gospel, and kind of ignite that fire of the Holy Spirit in their hearts.
God bless you. Congratulations on that. Because, I mean, one of the, there's not very many disadvantages, I would think, to living in New Zealand, but one of them is that you're far away from everybody else. And so you got to put up money if you're going to have people come in just to buy a plane ticket.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of people come over to Australia, but most people think that New Zealand's part of Australia, and would not.
Do you know you're the second person from New Zealand I've spoken to in 2 days, and you've both said the same thing? Are you very sensitive about this in New Zealand, that people think that you're part of Australia?
I'm English, so I don't mind. Oh. But,
oh, you are. Okay.
All right.
Just in case there's anyone on Earth who doesn't know, people of the Earth, New Zealand is its own country. We've solved that now.
Is New Zealand part of England?
No, New Zealand is not part of England anymore.
Our flag is on their flag, but we won't get into that.
Our flag is on
their
flag.
It's part of the British Empire.
Tell us a little bit about how people can come out to the talks. And I think, I don't know, following Tim Staples and Deacon Harold, that's not easy to do, but I'll do my best.
Well, you know, that's all we ask for you. But, you know, with God's grace, we can accomplish great things. And we have about 7 events planned for Auckland. We've got 3 main ones, one at the Cathedral in Auckland City, on the North Shore at Glenfield Parish, and in Meadowbank. So go on down there, get involved, because I've been looking at the talks you're going to deliver, and I'm very excited about them. A lot about like evangelization.
They're better on paper.
Okay, cool. Well, we can hand out the bios as well, and okay, make sure good. That people yeah. get those to take away.
Right.
Yeah, and then we're going to be doing men's groups in the before work with coffee and donuts and cycle, of course. But yeah, and hopefully I'll be getting to get you on my podcast as well, Curiously Catholic. So I'm going to be launching that again next week.
You've had wonderful interviews on there. Yeah, I checked it out. You've interviewed great people on there. Well, thank you very much. I'm surprised you said coffee and donuts. I thought it would be tea, since you're part of England. I thought it'd be tea and donuts, but.
Well, New Zealand has the best coffee in the world, aside from Italy.
I'm learning from people in New Zealand that everything in New Zealand is the best in the world.
Australians say the same thing about their coffee. They're nutty about coffee in Australia.
In New Zealand is world famous in New Zealand.
Indeed it is. All right, so Dominic, if people want to find out, then give them a website or a Facebook page, or where can they go to find out?
Yeah, so you can check out our Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/NZEvangelion, and look, check out our NZ. So that's NZ for New Zealand. Okay. And also, the Curiously Catholic podcast. I'm going to be relaunching the episode next Wednesday, and we'll be talking about all the things that we're going to be doing regarding the tour and future tours and few more things just to keep things interesting.
Now, the religiosity in general, but particularly the Catholic faith as well in New Zealand, it's been in decline. It's been in terrible decline here in the U.S., but maybe even a greater free fall in New Zealand.
Yeah, my friend gave me a statistic this morning. He said only 9% of the country attend church, and that's across all Christian churches. So it's even less in the Catholic church. But we get a lot of imports, so a lot of people from all around the world come, so that kind of boosts our numbers a bit. But we've got a lot of work to do. But you know,
well, thanks for letting us be part of it here at Catholic Answers. It's a great privilege for us. I just think the fact that you said, "Let's get a group together, raise money, and we'll get speakers in here, and we'll start firing people up for the faith again here in New Zealand." I think it's heroic, and congratulations on it, Dominic.
Well, thank you.
Let's ask all our listeners' side to pray for Dominic's efforts and for the people of New Zealand, and for safe travels for you and the Catholic Answers team going down there.
I hope people will. Dominic, thanks.
Thank you very much.
I'll see you in New Zealand for coffee and donuts.
God bless, Dominic.
I'm not going to forget that, man. You mentioned donuts. I'm not going to forget. That better happen. Let's just put that.
We had donuts in the office yesterday. You weren't here.
I know. I failed to show up. The one day there's donuts, I failed to show up. That's a cruel joke.
There was a lovely young lady named Teresa who came for a little tour, and she had such a great time. She sent us a box of donuts.
Teresa is I never even met her, and she's my favorite.
She was
person.
On the show. You don't remember?
Oh, that Teresa. Oh. Okay. No, I thought you meant she came yesterday when I wasn't here. I apologize, Teresa. I didn't. I got.
Yeah.
All right. I apologize. Pope Francis says.
For everyone listening, I just want to point out that it's really easy to get mentioned on the show. You just send donuts.
Whoa, that is exactly true. You send donuts, you will get mentioned on the show. In a conversation with Jesuits in Portugal, I'm reading from the Catholic news agency, Hannah Brockhaus reporting, at the beginning of August, Pope Francis commented on a climate of closure in the United States, which he said sometimes replaces faith with ideology. You say you have felt a climate of closure, the Pope said, addressing a question from a Jesuit brother. Yes, this climate can be experienced in some situations. And there you can lose the true tradition and turn to ideologies for support. In other words, ideology replaces faith. Membership in a sector of the church replaces membership in the church. Pope Francis' comments were made during a meeting with Jesuits August 5th in Lisbon, Portugal. An English translation of Francis's private conversation with the members of the Society of Jesus was published by the Jesuit journal La. Say the name of it, Joe. I can't talk Italian. La Civile.
Yeah, Civita Cattolica. I don't remember the name of it. Cattolica. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that help, Joe.
I didn't know I was going to get a pop quiz of remember the name of a journal.
but this is a very important journal, and the thing is, if it was published there. That's intentional. The intention right. there is to make sure everybody knows that the Pope said these things. He said the situation, the Pope said the situation in the United States is not easy due to a very strong reactionary attitude, which is organized and shapes the way people belong, even emotionally. And he referenced what the Italian, what he calls an Italian indietrismo?
Backwardsism.
Okay, a backwardsism. Looking backwards, it says in the translation.
There's not, there's not a great. I mean, it's the word backwards.
Is it like backsliding kind of or like?
No, it's like
reactionary.
I mean, it doesn't have exactly the same, but it's looking to the past excessively.
Here's what
the negative form of traditionalism.
Is there more from the Pope here?
There is more. This attitude, he noted, is useless, and we need to understand that there is an appropriate evolution in the understanding of matters of faith and morals as long as we follow the three criteria of Vincent of Larens, already indicated in the 5th century. Doctrine evolves, and I'll have to cover the rest when we get back. So we'll finish with what the Pope said, and then we'll hear what Joe and Chris have to say about what the Pope said right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Excitement is building for Catholic Answers Annual Apologetics Conference. I believe in God. There's still time to join us September 21st through 24th in sunny San Diego as we welcome Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers, as well as your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Join us for a conference that is sure to ignite, encourage, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Jonette Williams. We bring you the truth of the Catholic faith on Women of Grace tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the flannel panel with Chris and Joe and me, and we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective while wearing flannel shirts. And this, we're just discussing.
It sounds so dumb when you say it.
It is dumb. Wait, you think that like the flannel shirts part is dumb? Like, there's no reason for that.
Fair enough.
All right. Yeah. I mean, except unless it was really cold out.
I think
or something.
You just insulted like all of Middle America there. Or...
No, I'm just saying it's not related to anything. That
I like flannel shirts.
Oh yeah, I love grunge rock. I'm a huge fan of Nirvana. I would never say anything. I don't know any Nirvana songs, but it smells like.
I'm just a fan of the idea of it.
Okay, here, I want to finish reading what the Pope said.
It's an ideology for you, Joe.
So the Pope, Pope Francis, whom we have already defended and celebrated for his trip to Mongolia and his comments on Russia, I imagine we will get a more dubious response to this, but I want to finish the quotation so I can get the response. And so the Pope, talking to the Jesuits in Portugal when he was in Portugal, said all those things that I just said, and then he went on, "When you go backward, you form something closed, disconnected from the roots of the church, and you lose the sap of revelation. If you don't change upward, you go backward. And then you take on criteria for change other than those our faith gives for growth and change. Francis said the effects of this backwardness on morality are devastating. The problem that moralists have to examine today are very serious, and to deal with them, they have to take the risk of making change, but in the direction I was saying. So that refers back to what he was saying earlier. So what the Pope is saying is, I'm not exactly sure what he's saying. I have to be honest with you. It was a lot, and it seemed a bit circuitous to me. I'm not exactly sure what he was saying, but I do know that what he is saying is there are moralists, conservative ideologues in the church in the United States who are a real problem for the church.
So I want to know a number of things. The first is this: is there a pope, say, in the modern age, who has made a practice of calling people names? And I don't think this is in the papacy of Benedict or Pope St. John Paul or Paul VI or John XXIII or Leo XIII or any of the Piuses. I just don't think they called people names.
You're talking about the indiestri name that he...
Yeah,
the backwards. But
yeah, exactly. Or recalcitrant or what
indiestristi or
something. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there's an equivalent... am I prepared to call this, you know, he's insulting people? I don't know if that's exactly it, but he's showing a frustration with his critics that does not address the criticism, but reduces it to name calling. And so that's the first thing that I object to. Here's something else. I can think of one passage in particular, and probably my friend Joe can think of others, where Jesus was very backward-looking. I'm thinking of when he's talking about...
Like marriage?
Divorce.
Oh, yeah, right.
This is the one.
Yeah, he looked all the way back to the beginning.
To the beginning. He yeah. did. He said, so... And by the way, something that the Pope says here seemed to me to contradict what he wants to... the message he wants to get across. So you can't look backward, but you have to go back to the root. Well, which is it, Holy Father? But anyway, our Lord is very explicit. He says, Moses permitted divorce because you guys, you know, had hard hearts.
Yeah.
But that's not the way it was in the beginning. And I'm looking backward to the beginning. So that's one example. And probably Joe can come up with so much. So that's the second thing. The third thing is just a general observation. And I've said this on this program 1,000 times. The Pope has several responsibilities: govern, sanctify, and teach. And a teacher has to be clear. Otherwise, you're not doing your job as a teacher.
That, I think, is a very fair criticism of this. This is not clear at all.
No, it is utterly unclear, and I would say deliberately unclear. So,
well, okay.
There's two ways to think of reading the lack of clarity. One is that he doesn't want to just name the people he's criticizing.
What good does that do?
He's talking to Portuguese Jesuits about how bad some Americans are.
Well, here's
already like a strange spot to be in. But the other is that he doesn't really know his critics or know American Catholics well enough to have kind of an informed criticism, where he can't name this thinker is dangerous and bad or that one. It's more of an impression or even a stereotype.
All the more reason not to say anything, because if he doesn't have a good command of who has said what and why, and he's going to make a broad brush remark like it becomes an ideology, and I'm not exactly even sure what that means. So these are beliefs that actually are sort of attached to an agenda, and maybe that's what he means by ideology. But all the more reason. So if he is unclear, then he ought not say something. If there's someone in particular in America, I don't know, Michael Voris or Raymond Arroyo.
Didn't a pope write an encyclical to Edward Cardinal Gibbon at one point to criticize Americanism? Like that, it Pius?
He does. It's Leo XIII. He's explicit in writing to Cardinal Gibbon and the other Irish.
He doesn't write to the Portuguese to convince
him
to the Americans.
No, you don't talk in a meeting to some Jesuit. You just write it and say, this is not acceptable. You can't have a special morality for America. And you go on, but this does bother me that I don't actually know who he's talking about. Like, go ahead. Chris.
Here's just the final thing, and then maybe I'll be quiet. since he doesn't, since he's not clear what he's saying and he doesn't name the people, I mean, he's taken a whack at EWTN in the past. I don't know that it was.
Maybe. I mean, did he even name them?
He referred to a giant American network or something like that, right?
I think it was EWTN, Joe. Like, yeah. Between you and me, I'm going to go with it was EWTN.
I don't know if it's, I'm guessing it's probably Raymond and when Rob Royal is on there and Father John Murray.
Say that, I'm tired of these people.
And you can say, here's the difficulty with what my critics are saying about me, and then clarify it. So this does not help at all. It doesn't make whatever it is, the thing that he is objecting to, clear in the minds of the people hearing. Because he talks about, I don't know, conservative Catholics. Is he talking about Catholic Answers?
That's what I don't
know.
We
try not to use that word conservative. We say Orthodox or...
And we get so many, complaints about how liberal we are and how we're always Pope-splaining and all this stuff. But I don't know, does the Pope mean us? Even though maybe he means us. In which case... Holy Father, tell me what you want.
Explain
because
what
I don't
is
know what
problem.
It means. This ideology, all these words, and around and around we go. And I'm back. Am I backwards or not
and
backwards? I don't know.
And what are these doctrines what are these backward things that we're holding on to? Like
it's not sexual ethics,
me,
is it?
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
All right, Joe, take a stab. Explain this to us.
Because I don't. Yeah, I might be Pope explaining here. I actually don't know if this is even what he means. But I try to I try to meet him halfway or 90% of the way to see if there's something I can kind of take.
And you are completely right. Yes, you are right to do that. We are under an absolute obligation to hear whatever the Pope says with as much charity and desire to follow him. He's the vicar of Christ. So I applaud you for that.
There are times where you have a homily that you hear and you're like, I'm not sure what the priest is saying, but it kind of reminds me of this thing I need to work on in my spiritual life.
Exactly.
The Holy Spirit can work through that.
Right. That's pretty much every
even
homily.
If like it's possible both to say that could have been clearer and maybe there's a rose among the thorns.
Exactly. Yes. So find the rose, Joe.
The two things I would point out. One, I do think we all have to be cautious of whether we put partisan ideology or Catholic faith first. We live in a deeply partisan society, and I've met plenty of Catholics who break with Catholic teaching, whether that be de fide or just prudential judgment, at exactly the places where it diverges from their political philosophy.
The atomic bomb.
Yeah, the atomic bomb is a great example. We talked about the atomic bomb. This is so clear. You can't purposely kill a child to end a war. So you can't purposely kill an entire civilian city to end a war.
Yeah. But as Americans, and there is a kind of Americanism in this, that, well, we had a big responsibility, and don't you understand there was a... And all we say is, look, the church teaches you can't kill innocent children for any good reason. There is no good reason. If the world is ending, you still can't kill to save the world innocent children.
I think Joe has made a very good point here. We tend to think of the church, we tend to make the mistake of thinking the church as a political movement. It's not an institution founded by Jesus Christ for the salvation of souls. And if that's what the Holy Father means there, good on you, bud. That's exactly true.
And this is, I think, why we avoid the language of conservative Catholic, because we're not trying to bolster the right wing. We're trying to do something radically different that's not left or right, it's up. And until we start thinking in that way, we need to, Romans 12:2, we need to be transformed with the renewal of the mind so that we can have the mind of Christ. And the mind of Christ is probably not going to neatly fit into the same box as a left-wing or a right-wing politician.
It can't.
And if we can't tell the difference between Donald Trump and Jesus Christ or between Joe Biden and Jesus Christ, we've got some serious moral formation that we're in need of. And I think that's something we can take as a self-assessment. And I'm not going to name names or point fingers. Just say, ask yourself if this is true of your own. Where do you find it hardest to follow church teaching? And is that where your political party of choice breaks? Because if that's the case, who are you serving? You can't serve God and mammon. You can't serve God in politics. So we have to be very cautious about putting anyone or anything above Jesus Christ and his bride. Now, the second place I would maybe find a rose among the thorns is, I've been going back to this a lot recently, in the intellectual life, Father Cyril Lange, in the early 20th century, this is literally like 100 years ago, he tells us not to be like those people who always seem to be pallbearers at the funeral of the past, that it's easy to just say, oh, if only I'd lived in such and such a golden age of the church, then things would be so easy. And if we could just bring around, you know, the 1950s again, or the 1140s again, or some other, you know, then that's what we need to do. And it's like, no, that's clearly not what we're called to do. And so he says, let us utilize by living the qualities of the dead. Truth is ever new. Like the grass of morning, moist with glistening dew, all the old virtues are waiting to spring up afresh. God does not grow old. We must help our God to renew, not the buried past and the chronicles of a vanished world, but the eternal face of the earth. And I love that way of thinking, you know, don't be just nostalgic for the past. Don't be just constantly looking backwards. By all means, draw upon it. The whole ressourcement, like there's a real sense in which you draw on the resources of the past, but don't just get caught in a nostalgia for the past. One last thing from Cyril Lange. He says, every age is not as good as every other, but all ages are Christian ages. And there is one which for us, and in practice surpasses them all, our own. That God has called us to right now, to 2023. And so by all means, learn from what's come before us, but don't just live in a fantasy world where you're still living in the past.
That was really beautiful, Joe. And I recommend everyone listening to this program to pick up a copy of the Intellectual Life by Cyril Lange. It's superb. I think you have put the just about the kindest blush that you possibly could have on what does not make sense.
But there's a very good argument to be made for we are morally obligated to put the kindest blush on it, that we really don't have a choice. I mean, when Christ's Vicar speaks, you have to listen in a childlike way, not in a superior way or an arrogant way. And I do think there is a childlike ability.
Are we entitled to try to decipher what's being said here?
But that's the thing, is a child can say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I don't know who you're talking about.
This is not a one-off as far as unclear things that the Holy Father has said.
Right, yeah.
He was explicit on the patrimony of Russia, and I'm 100% behind him on that.
Right.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Pope Francis.
It's okay for them to look to their past.
And a bunch of other things.
Wait a second. He's encouraging all these Russian young people to look to their past.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying. And now he's saying if you're American and you look to the past, you're a moralist and an ideologue.
Look, I want to know if there's really a problem. And I, actually, okay, I'm gonna give Joe some latitude here. There are I don't know what I want to call them, like, I don't know, conservative Catholics or Republican Catholics who too much associate the Republican Party platform with the Catholic Church.
Because of the pro-life thing. I think it got jammed up to a lot of people.
Pro-life, and they very strongly see a relationship between free market economics and Catholic social teaching. And, you know, Father Sirico up there at the Acton Institute who's trying to fit a square peg in a round hole on those two points. But I don't know that this is a really big problem. First of all,
historically it has been in the U.S. So it was in the other direction, though. Think about the 1970s when the Democratic Party with the new left takes a hard break. You know, you get like a 100-year history of the Democratic Party being the party of rum rebellion and Romanism. You know, that this was the anti-prohibitionist party. It's the anti-Yankee party, and it's a pro-immigrant, meaning largely pro-Catholic party. And they were excoriated by the Republican Party, which was kind of like good old boy WASPy Americans. And so if you were an immigrant Catholic, the Democratic Party was pretty obviously your home. But as it shifted morally, a lot of Catholics kind of went along for the ride.
Right.
And so people who had not distinguished intellectually between their Democratic identity and their Catholic identity, when they had to choose, a lot of people made the wrong choice. They allowed themselves to be formed more by their political masters than by their Lord and by the bride of Christ. And that is a real danger we've seen people fall into. I mean, you can see it in the numbers. And I think given that, we want to be careful that it doesn't happen in the other direction. Like, it is clear on the abortion issue, one party's right and the other one's not. But on a lot of other issues, you can't just count on the GOP being like a sane voice of morality. You have to go beyond either political party to be well-formed and to live sanely in the world.
Right, right.
I stipulate everything you say, Joe. I guess my only question is that the real problem right now? When we have widespread unbelief, first of all, in God, but within our own parishes, in the Eucharist, in the fundamental teaching of the Church, Cy brought up earlier, the settling of the question on contraception, which is far from settled. Liturgical reverence, the use of the sacrament of confession. I could just think of about three dozen things that are more urgent in the life of Catholics in America right now.
I mean, certainly when I hear the Pope talk about rigorism, it does seem like he's fighting last year's battle. You know, like, but, it seems like he's fighting against a problem that is largely non-existent anymore. But I do think there's a problem right now with the Church being viewed in the eyes of many young people as being a political kind of institution. And if they don't
young
agree
people,
with the
primary problem that young people have with the Church is it's not LGBTQ friendly. That's the primary problem. That's the thing that's driving young. And so we have
this
to negotiate
that. This is not clarifying that problem.
No, this does nothing to help with that problem. Nope. And I don't know what moral change the Pope is calling for. He's saying, if I hold on to morals and I'm a moralist and I don't allow change, then I have a serious problem. He says that they have a very serious problem. But what moral has to change? I mean, because there's morals that are just mores, which they do have to change. They have to constantly change. But there are also moral absolutes. And I know he is a moral absolutist. He talks about me. He says, if you have an abortion, you're hiring a hitman. So what? And maybe I'll just leave it there, and we'll take a quick break, and you come back. And if either of you can answer this question, I'm going to give you a donut. What is the moral change that he is saying that people are refusing, that the Holy Spirit is calling us to? We'll get an answer on the other side on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because, if you look in the Catechism, you will see the fruits of Holy Communion. And these are remarkable things that we can receive at every Mass that we attend. We encounter the risen Lord, and he shares something of his divine life and love with us.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I will repeat again, after defending the Pope and celebrating the Pope.
I want to go on record that I backed him 100% on his comments on Dostoevsky.
Yeah, right. And I do. I mean, the Pope needs to be supported and defended in many areas. But I have to say, baffled by these comments on morality. Because I can look at it this way. When he says there are rigorous and backward-looking people in America who are having trouble with moral change, with legitimate moral change. He's saying there's legitimate moral change, not just licentiousness. He's talking about there's good moral change happening, that some people are the only thing that I can make work with that I think I know what he's talking about is the death penalty, where clearly there are people who have opposed his moral change on the death penalty. But then he says that we're obsessed with issues below the belt, and that has nothing to do with the death penalty. He saying that we have to change sexual morality? Because if he's talking about the death penalty, I do think there's a lot of people who have resisted him and sometimes said very unfair things, like that he changed doctrine or something, and he did not change doctrine. That's not what he did. He made a change in the way we talk about the death penalty. Criticize it, whatever, if you want. But I could say, okay, Holy Father, I get what you're talking about. There are a lot of Americans who are not going with you on the death penalty. But then he says below the belt thing, and I think, well, he's talking about sex.
And he throws in Vincent of Lorenz here, what, you know, for cover? Well, Vincent of Lorenz says that something can't be and then not be. It can't, as Joe said during the break, it can't be yes and then no, or it can't be X and not X.
Right. There's no moral development where what the Lord said no to, we can now say yes to.
Yes.
That can never happen.
So why they appeal to Vincent Lorenz here? What's
help us, Joe?
I mean, Vincent has a good, like, it's worth reading the commentarium because Vincent of Lorenz is famous for two seemingly contradictory things. On the one hand, when we talk about development of doctrine, he's who everybody points to. You know, it's either going to be John Henry Newman or St. Vincent.
Yeah.
And Newman is pointing to Vincent as well. And the other thing Vincent is famous for is the so-called rule of St. Vincent, which is that we should believe, been believed by everyone, always, everywhere. And, you know, you'll find different translations or you know, statements of that. And it's like, wait, well, hang on. How could both of those things be true? And you're going to have to read the book to find out. Because he talks about how, actually, you know what? I think Chesterton has a good image of this, that true development of doctrine isn't a puppy becoming a cat. True development of doctrine is a puppy becoming a dog. Mm-hmm. It's the interior working out of those things that are already kind of the planted seeds of belief. And so you have to be very discerning in saying, okay, there are things that are maybe clearer to us now than were clear in the second century, say. Because we've had time to kind of talk an issue out, and we can see some implications that might not have been as immediately obvious.
And the death penalty falls. That's the Pope clearly believes that. Whatever you or I believe or anyone else believes, the Pope clearly believes that's the case with the death penalty.
I think that we see clearer today.
It once was moral, and now it's immoral.
No. Just that we have that it has been clarified. In a way that we would come to a more negative verdict on it. Not an absolute verdict, but a more negative verdict on it than they would in the second century.
Right. And okay. I think you can look at other issues like slavery on this, where if you take the Christian project seriously and say, okay, if I believe all of this stuff, what should I make of this unexamined part like slavery? Then it increasingly becomes obvious, well, clearly this is incompatible with it. And so just as I said earlier, you know, we have to be kind of rigorously aware of, you know, do these things that my party believes match up with the gospel? Well, you need to also be rigorously aware of, do these things the culture believes match up with the gospel? And I think Chris has already identified a number of them. You know, there's a strong individualistic libertarian strain within American thinking, really across political lines, that we're just less family-oriented and group-oriented. How much do we need to kind of heal that in the light of the gospel? So I guess there's a sense in which we can talk about development of doctrine in that way. But you're right. It's also possible, and I'm not accusing Pope Francis of this, but certainly many people who view themselves as Francis Catholics will use the language of St. Vincent, the language of development of doctrine, to push for things that Vincent would have said, well, this is contrary to what was always believed by everyone everywhere.
Joe, I find... I find the slavery analogy a little helpful, but in the end, unconvincing, because there's not an example where the church teaches that it's okay, that it's moral to buy and sell and own another man. But the church at Trent, for example, is explicit on the moral use of capital punishment and why.
So I think that it's true. So you can't take the absolutist position. And even though Pope Francis, in one of his homilies, sounded like he was pushing for a more absolutist position, what came out in the catechism is more nuanced and much more provisional.
Can we go another hour?
Let's do another hour. Yeah.
On
the one hand, you could say these are just comments from one Jesuit to some other Jesuits. They're musings of the Pope. This is how he communicates with his brothers. But then they published it.
He's the Pope. That's why.
And so we do have to consider it. But we love him and support him and pray for him.
Amen.
And keep praying for him because that is not an easy job. I just would like to understand him better when he says these particular things. And maybe I'm just sensitive about it because I'm an American Catholic and it was directed at American Catholics. So
come with us to Rome.
Come with us to Rome. CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you, Chris.
You're a good man, Si.
See you next time right here on Catholic Answers Live. God willing.